So here we are, and you can hear it on the airwaves, can't you? We're only a day away now from the polls opening for the 2017 general election. But here's a question. Should it be compulsory to vote? Would you like to see penalties for those who don't head to the polling stations? Or should everyone have the freedom to decide and exercise the right to stay at home? The commentators Brendan Mulgrew and the former NI21 leader Basil McRae with us this morning. It's always good to hear from Basil. Good morning to you, Basil.
Good morning, Stephen.
It's always good to hear from you too, Brendan. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen and Basil.
Should we be forcing people to vote, Basil?
So there are certain reasons why you would compel people. It's obviously a good thing, the more representative you have in your democratic structures. But lots of individuals will look at it and say, does it really make any difference to whether I vote or not? And they become disengaged in the political process, and therefore the decisions that our politicians make are not deemed to be representative of the entire community. So there are quite a number of democracies, not least Australia, but also Belgium, where, of course, we get the hunt from, where they do have compulsory voting, and it tends to increase the participation rate by up to 30%.
Brendan?
It's on balance. I think that you can't compel someone to vote. I think it should be. I think it's better if we instill a sense of civic responsibility and civic duty. And there are ways to try and do that, not least of which the onus is on the political parties themselves and people who put themselves forward for election to inspire people to want to go out and polling day and want to vote for them. I think if it becomes something that you get a fine, where if you don't vote, or becomes even the threat of a jail sentence, which ultimately could be the sanction in Australia if you don't pay the fines, etc. I think if you force people to vote under those circumstances, then it's something that you have to do, like paying your tax or taking your car for an MOT. And you get a situation then where people will vote just for the sake of voting, just to avoid the fine, without even having a real sense of who they're voting for, why they're making certain decisions. Are making themselves fully informed of what a particular candidate or a particular party stands for. But it's good that we're having the discussion. It's very worthwhile because until March this year, the trend locally, where about 20 years ago we had great turnouts, our turnouts have been falling, election after election after election. But people are becoming increasingly disengaged. Now, I think that's a wider conversation than an argument for and against compulsory voting. Why are people tuning out of politics?
Are you seriously then saying, Basil, that, look, the people shouldn't have the right to say, I've listened to all of them, I don't like any of them, and you're compelling them to vote for someone even if they don't like any of them?
No, I'm saying that you should be compelled to vote, not that you should vote for anybody in particular. If you wish to, you can go spoil your ballot,
yeah.
You can write none of the above,
yeah.
You can do everything.
But if you don't
go
to your polling station on election day, you're hit with a fine.
Well, you see, there is a reason about how you try and get people to do things that are generally good. It's like, would you wear a seatbelt? You know, everybody accepted that wearing a seatbelt was good, it saved lives, yeah, or whatever.
It's good for your health to wear a seatbelt, but,
yes.
But politics isn't often good for your health. Look at
well, for goodness sake.
I
think that maybe it does affect your health, but just don't realise it. There's a key point, there's a really important point I want to make in this about the polls and why the polls get it wrong sometimes or whatever. It's because there's a differential turnout between young people, those people under the age of 35 that do not vote, only about 40% of them vote, whereas older people do vote, about 80 to 90% of them vote, and they do that disparity in turnout has a huge impact on the type of people that we elect and the laws that they make. And so I just think that whether you're looking at young people needing proper representation or people from more challenging circumstances that tend not to vote, making it compulsory actually increases the likelihood that they get a truly representative democracy and we start making laws that everybody buys into.
Go on, Brendan.
Is that the case, Basil? Because if someone goes to the polling station because they are forced to under law, are they making an informed decision about the options that are in front of them on the ballot paper? Or are they thinking, they may well go and vote for the very first name they see just to avoid a fine or just to have completed their legal responsibility. I'd prefer to see, let's teach civic responsibility and the values of democracy to our primary school children, to our secondary school children.
So, Brendan, lots of people go to our polls at the moment. Brendan, lots of our people go to the polls at the moment and they vote for whoever their mum and dad tells them. Or they look down the list and they say, I don't know any of these people, but you know, there's a name I recognise or whatever.
But they're going by choice, Basil.
Yeah, they're making an uninformed decision. What I'm saying to you is that argument doesn't hold. What is important is getting people to vote at a time, as you said yourself, that there's complete disenchantment with the entire political process, not with politics per se, but with the process. We don't seem to get any form of representative government that people are happy with, and you can see it right across the world. So what do you have to do in a way that reluctantly, I mean, I'm not one to normally impose obligations on people, but reluctantly,
but Basil,
you have to say, if everybody votes, we get a better democracy.
Basil, is politics box office anymore, though? Because, look, when you see some of these, you know, I'm talking about the network election television interview programmes, if Britain's Got Talent on or any of these other shows are on, which are of an entertainment background, they blow the political shows out of the water.
Yeah, Stephen, I heard you mention just how much you're going to be doing on Radio 5 Live and whatever, and I can tell you, most people, after a seven-week campaign, are fed up to the back teeth of the analysis, the counterpoint, whatever. They don't listen anymore. And, I mean, I think that's not a good thing. But the difference about actually considering once every 4 or 5 years spending 15 to 30 minutes to go and create to cast your vote, I think people should be doing that. I think everybody should be voting. And I also think we should be making it easier.
Everybody should be. There's no doubt about that. And I abhor it when someone says, I'm not voting, none of them are worth it. I think you're opting out of politics then, and I think you're removing yourself from yourself the right to even have a proper conversation, a critical conversation. If you don't take part in the political process, I'm not sure you're entitled to criticise the politicians who do take
part.
We've actually had seven elections in this last 4 years. It's not one every 5 years in Northern Ireland. We've had seven elections.
And you know what they say? You know what Einstein said about if you keep doing the same thing over and over again and each time expecting a different result? Then that's the sound of badness. We've got to change our political system. We've got to change our voting system. We've got to do something to get people to vote for a system that will actually work. I'm not saying what the system will be. I'm saying what we've got at the moment is not working.
Here's Alex in London. Morning, Alex.
Good morning, Stephen. You've had quite a rough morning.
Well, look, everybody blames me and everything. They'll be blaming me and the sun not coming up at night time, at midnight.
I wouldn't be surprised. Stephen, on the question of voting, I consider it my privilege to vote or not to vote, and the thought of being fined to do so, I think, we were talking about civil liberties and civil rights that we earlier, I think that would be taking it away, wouldn't it? I'm not sure, but it strikes me a wee bit like that. Do it or we're going to fine you. I don't see that working. Encourages to vote, not to give us a caning if we don't.
Alex, I agree with that.
Alex, thank you. Maliki next. Morning, Maliki.
Stephen, I think everybody's blaming you because you make that much money. You own the BBC, mate.
I do not own the BBC. Don't even remotely. Let me tell you something. They'll have me out in the air in a whim.
Well, you've got enough shares. You can vote yourself back.
I'll be back in Citybeat if they take me.
35 quid a session? I don't think so. But anyway, my point on voting is this.
Do you know what I fancy a wee job, Maliki?
Where?
I fancy a wee job in Prompt the Print or somewhere like that. Just where you can kind of walk in the mornings and I mean, I don't even know if Prompt the Print exists. I fancy a wee job in a bakery.
Well, sure, I can get a job.
Come in the morning and
you can go down our DKP.
That should be very contentious.
Well, you can come in the morning and you can kind of just
like ashers.
Sniff the like ashers.
We'll pay you.
Where you can sniff the bakery. You can sniff all the food. Nobody shouts at you. Did you hear me getting yelled at this morning?
I tell you what, you definitely got a drone, mate. I have to say, I mean, we're like pack animals, didn't you?
What are you moaning about now? I am genuinely sick to the back.
This is Young Vincent. Not many of you will have heard of him. He does a Monday night show.
Talking 10 o'clock. Yeah. Absolute nonsense. Yes. Now you want to be a baker and print pictures.
Maliki is pointing out
yes,
that I got shouted at this morning.
Rightly so.
The BBC doesn't.
This is why you get millions of pounds a year from the taxpayers.
Do you know
so it's proper order.
Do you know what the BBC doesn't realise?
Yes.
The BBC doesn't realise how much I carry on their behalf.
Do you know what I don't understand? How they continue to lap up your nonsense year after year and pay you thousands.
The BBC, you never hear the controller getting screamed at like I got screamed at this morning. You never hear the head of news or the head of radio. The head of radio's lying in his caravan probably at the minute.
I doubt that they irritate people as much as you do.
You don't hear these people getting screamed at like I get screamed at.
You should all the time.
Stephen. Yes. Here's a bit of info for you.
Yes.
I'm giving you a heads up on this.
Yes.
I have a lot of friends that live in the London area of the UK.
Yes.
And they actually phoned me this week and they mentioned your name, who they've never heard of in their lives.
Why am I getting the blame?
Ask me who this guy is because of what you're, I don't know what sort of rumblings you're making in the UK about the elections, but there's a lot of Jeremy Corbyn supporters over there. Don't like you, mate. So the Punta Print and the bakery might be the way to go for you.
The reason for that in terms of what they might be noticing, and it's not for me to express an opinion on it either way, but the one of the main Tory ads lifted an interview that I did with Jeremy Corbyn, and the interview was a couple of years ago, and they put that, I think it's got 5 million hits or something like
that's
that.
Correct.
So that's, and I had nothing to do with that, you know, on that.
Well, what can I tell you?
What?
The first thing he said to me, do you know, and I don't mean this to be detrimental, do you know a wee fat man in Belfast who does a radio show? That's the popularity you have in England, by the way, Steve. That'll bring you down a wee bit.
That's not very nice.
It's not very nice. And he says, that man is a personal friend of mine.
That could have been.
I was long busted.
Listen,
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't go that far.
Listen, a wee fat man in Northern Ireland who does a radio show, that could have been Crawley they were talking about.
Dr. Crawley.
Have you seen...
He has the biggest show in the country.
Of course he doesn't. Crawley's got about half the audience I have, for goodness sake. But have you seen...
Careful now.
Have you seen how fat Crawley's got?
No, he has. He got fat.
I'm telling you now, he's... fat.
I don't think it's appropriate for you to comment on another BBC presenter's appearance.
He's fat. I don't like him, and he's fat.
Why don't you like him?
Oh, for goodness sake, have you got a year?
Crawley's fat with an education, that's the difference, Lewis.
Oh, and doesn't he tell us he's got that education?
Do you feel threatened by William, is that it?
No, it's the fact that when William comes up to you, he says, hello, I'm Dr. Crawley.
And he then
mentions all the letters after his name.
No, he does.
And he tells you, I've got a first in this and a second in that, and I know the Archbishop of this and the man this. I don't care.
Steve, Crawley's phone in.
Did you see the Lucid poll about you?
What?
Did you see the Lucid poll about you?
Is there a poll about me?
Yeah, there's a big poll about you, and it compared you, Lucid Talk versus Crawley versus Mark Rothers, whatever. And apparently you turned out to be the most influential but the most negative of all of the commentators on the airwaves.
When was this poll done?
Can I stop you before you make an idiot of yourself? Because we talked about this on the program and we covered it extensively. Before you go, I've never heard of it in my life.
When did this poll
occur?
About 3,000 people responded. They were asked, what influence does the media have on the election process?
I don't remember this.
Oh yes, this is big time. And they looked at Crawley, they looked at UTV, they looked at all those people, and you were by far the most influential, but the most negative. All of the other people are much nicer. You know, they're actually like the positive, they say nice things, they go on whatever. You've got a really bad rep out there, and everybody's talking about it.
But you see, Crawley's listeners would say, Stephen, that Crawley is slightly obese. Your listeners would just say, no one's fat.
It's not very nice to say things like that. It's not nice to call you fat, whether you are or you're
that,
not.
But I'm just saying. I'm
no, but it's fun to call Crawley fat.
No, don't call Crawley fat.
Okay.
I think we
all thought you'd be pleased, though, that at least you weren't irrelevant. That was the key thing, that you would not be too worried, Stephen, about whether people did or did not like what you said, as long as they didn't ignore what you said.
Let me tell you this, Basil McCracey, as long as you're talking about Stephen Nolan, no matter what you're saying, that man is happy.
Do you know what I find really interesting, seriously, with this conversation?
Yes, this will be interesting.
It is that people suggest that I am negative, whereas actually what we do is we pose questions in the morning.
Yes.
And I don't...
Positive questions?
I don't express opinions on those questions.
No, but Stephen, it all boils down to this, mate, and again, I don't mean this to be detrimental.
Oh.
Who is the elephant in the room? I'll leave you a pond on that one.
Is he calling you fat again?
I think he's calling me an elephant.
He is.
Maybe people are suggesting that you could have a more positive slant on things than you do.
I did not exactly say that.
You could maybe be more positive in your outlook and your programming, maybe. I'm not saying that it's negative, but that's what some people might be questioning.
I could do a John Toole type show.
You could do.
What do you call that chef, your friend? Paula McIntyre.
Yes.
I could do one of those shows.
You'd be good in that barge trip.
What,
you know,
barge?
The barge, they go up and down the sort of the canals and things and just ruminate on life.
Dining with Nolan.
Listen,
Dining with Nolan.
We've done our...
Cheesy footballs and steel bread.
In true BBC fashion, we've tried to balance this discussion this morning for me and my criticism
is
of Crawley.
We've
actually found someone. This is actually quite extraordinary. We've found someone who supports Crawley.
Is it William?
Well...
himself.
Good morning, William.
Tell us about your degrees. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
Stephen, I think that your conduct this morning is...
reprehensible.
Disgraceful.
Outrageous, talking about that man.
It is. Now let me speak as a licensed VPR.
Yes.
I'm piped down there for a wee second because you're all excited this morning. But let me tell you that I believe that disgraceful and reprehensible behaviour that you've displayed this morning.
Yes.
Against William Crawley in the language and terminology you've used to describe him in a derogatory manner.
Yes.
Almost verges on the line of gross misconduct.
Yes.
And I would call on the BBC
to sack me immediately.
To review your contract and take affirmative action against you.
Yes, and Crawley could get the 9 o'clock slot.
He's a Crawley listener. I've had a look at this one. Five words he said there.
What did he say, Maliki?
One at a time.
Hold on a minute.
He's a Crawley listener. I've had to look at dictionary up for 5 words of his opening speech there.
Don't be using syllables on this programme.
I can't even spell that. Could you spell that one for me?
Hold on. Let me get this.
Yes, Rob. Carry on. Because Crawley, if we play out,
hold on.
Once. Talking at once.
For goodness sake, hold on. Fred, here's the thing. The thing is that you require... I think you're threatened, Mr. Crawley.
Yes, he is.
And here's why I think you're threatened by him. You require an entire BBC production team to put your programme together.
What do you think Crawley does on his own?
William would have the attribute and the skill to be able to put a programme and the factual content within it together.
Hold on. If you think about it, Rob, all Crawley needs to do is listen to us and then repeat it at 12.
He will be repeating this, won't he? He will be having the same debate about you on his top back. You know, he'll be saying, do you think Nolan...
No. William Crawley does not stoop to the levels that Mr. Nolan stoops to. And I have to say that he's a tad more respectful.
Absolutely.
If you take his initials, WC, that says a lot for it as well, guys.
Now, enough!
Aye.
No, that's not very nice.
He's not here to defend himself.
I have to go, Stephen.
Thank you, Rob. Good morning to you. Maliki.
Nobody told Rob that on this programme we like to stick to a 2-syllable maximum per word. Otherwise, you get confused.
Crawley is a true colleague.
What exactly is a syllable again?
Crawley is a true colleague and friend. It's been written for me to read out.
Have you just had an email from some well-known lawyer?
No, I've had an email from the head of radio that's kind of... the head of radio who's working from home this morning.
Stop slagging people off. You can't help it.
Honestly.
This is why people think you're negative, because you're constantly gurning.
Hey, look at this here, man. Still ringing me about a car I don't want. Goodness sake.